From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in August of last year with the closing of two local libraries. The Pauline Evans and the Helen McGraw branches of the Irondequoit Public Library were shut down due to poor building conditions and a lack of space. The Democrat and Chronicle said space was so limited that, quote, children playing with picture books practically rubbed shoulders with newspaper readers, end quote. The buildings were each more than 50 years old and hadn't been updated since 1985. But the story doesn't end there. 1 month later, a brand new 40,000 square foot library opened in Irondequoit on Titus Avenue. That facility includes meeting spaces, new technology, craft rooms, and of course, plenty of room for books. But not every library story has that kind of an ending or progress. Public libraries across the country are struggling to maintain all of their buildings to provide adequate resources and serve the patrons who want to use them. Library usage is up 10% statewide, but Governor Cuomo is proposing flat funding for libraries in the new state budget. While New York State education law requires library aid for 2016 to 2017 to be $102.6 million, the proposed state budget would provide $91.6 million. Should we be concerned? Are libraries still as relevant as they used to be? What does their future hold? How are they adapting? Those are the questions and more that we will pose this hour. And we'd like to hear from you and the public. We'd love to know when's the last time you used your public library. What do you use it for? You can call the program and tell us. But first, let me welcome my guests for the hour. Kathy Miller's here, the executive director of the Rochester Regional Library Council. Kathy, nice to have you.
Thank you.
Also here's Patty Utaro, the director of the Rochester Public Library and Monroe County Library System. Patty, nice to have you.
Thanks.
Coming from Irondequoit, going to tell us all about the new digs. Matt Kruger is here, a teen services librarian at the Irondequoit Public Library. And you said it's been going very well over there, yeah?
Yeah, we're very excited, and the community is really excited, too.
All right, thank you. We'll have a lot to talk about there. And Maria Fisher's here, who just describes herself as a proud public library patron and has got a great personal story that she's going to share. Maria, nice to have you. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Evan.
Well, let me just start with what's going on and just that number. I guess from what I'm reading, state law says we're supposed to, at the state level, fund it, Kathy, at $102.6 million. That would be the baseline. They're proposing something like $11 million less. Are they, sort of, for lack of a better question, are they allowed to do that?
Unfortunately, that does happen. We all went through the recession of 2008, and funding was cut at that point. So we did at one point have $102 million, but there was funding that was cut, and gradually we've been getting back to the level that we really are in the law for. I won't say the level we need, because we actually need a lot more than that.
All right, so but for what? And I don't say that flippantly. I just want you to kind of articulate to us what you need the funding for and what that gap represents in terms of what you'll be able to do.
In terms of funding gap, there really were a lot of cutbacks in services that happened. Staff were laid off. Services were stopped. And so really it's just a lot of it is getting back to where we were before and the services that we provide and looking at new services and new programs. As you know, libraries are in transition, and all of that really requires the funding.
All right, well, let's just get a look at what one of the new spaces is doing here. So let me bring in Matt Kruger from the Irondequoit Public Library. Again, you opened when? The new space when?
September.
In September. And looking at the numbers that I have here, in several months, just from September 1st through the end of the year, you saw a 26% increase in the number of items that were loaned to customers over last year. 26% increase, that means almost 200,000 items loaned out. You saw a 34% increase over the same period last year in just the number of people visiting the library, more than 133,000. A big jump in reservations, new workshops and classes. So, you know, and this isn't spin. Those are actual numbers. So it looks to me like the public has responded to the space. Yes?
Yeah, it's kind of like if you build it, they will come. The old libraries didn't have the space for people to come and spend time to reserve rooms. We had limited programming space. And now there's a plethora of spaces, rooms we have, especially since we combined to one. We're able to do more with what we had before. We can provide more programming. The Library Foundation raised a lot of money that helped us get a lot of great technology that is also allowing for more programming.
All right, so Matt, you know that there are some taxpayers who say, libraries are not as relevant as they used to be. It's just different now. Why fund it to the same level? Given your own experience at Irondequoit, but also just speaking in general about this, what do you say to taxpayers who raise that question?
That's a good question. I would say, libraries are constantly evolving and finding ways to meet the current needs of their communities. Just because the needs, not everybody needs the books like they used to, but there are other things. A lot of people can't afford internet access at home. They can't afford to have all of these movies that we provide at the library. It's about quality of life. It's kind of a great place for people to kind of improve themselves.
Yeah, and you mentioned internet. It is so easy for us to take for granted internet access. And I think if we don't, if you have it at home, it's hard to sort of imagine living life without it, right? But I'm reading that 25% of the households in this country still don't have it. And a lot of those people, that's millions of people in this country, a lot of those people will rely on their local public library. Does that happen in Irondequoit?
Oh, definitely. We've got a computer lab upstairs with over 30 computers, and you walk in there any day, anytime, they're going to be mostly full. And that's people searching jobs, that's people who need to print out things, because they don't have a printer at home. But they're also using it for, social and kind of entertainment needs. But we get a lot of people that we have to help fill out job applications.
Sure. Patty Utara, director of the Rochester Public Library and Monroe County Library System. Do we take for granted the internet?
Oh, absolutely. In the city of Rochester, we've done surveys over the last few years. We've seen numbers anywhere from 65% to 73% of people who answer the surveys about computer use say they have no other place to go for computers and internet, and that includes applying for jobs. It includes applying for government assistance. It includes teaching themselves new skills. We run classes all the time in the libraries, not just in the city, but throughout the county, that are filled every single day with people who need help learning how to use Microsoft Word or Excel, or just learning how to use a computer itself. Believe it or not, there are still a lot of people out there who don't know how to use a mouse. So library staff have turned into teachers in many instances where we're teaching people basic skills like that.
Patty, let me ask you what I asked Kathy and Matt, and I'm trying to do this in a way that isn't a softball for you. I want to ask you a question, the same kind of question that taxpayers want to ask. But it sounds to me like your answer might be different if libraries hadn't changed in 30 years. If the libraries we remembered from our childhood were the same today as they were, then maybe you'd need less funding, right? Because they'd be less used. But it does sound like the evolution of libraries has essentially expanded and changed part of the mission. So is that part of why, in your mind, cutting funding is a bad idea?
Well, I wouldn't say that our mission has changed. The way it's packaged has changed.
Sure, sure.
We're still providing access to information. It may not be in the form of print books anymore, or at least not in the majority, but we're still providing access for people to improve themselves, to teach themselves new skills, to brush up on old skills. And libraries have also become a meeting space. In the city neighborhoods, for example, our branch libraries are anchors in those neighborhoods. You can go over to the Lincoln branch on Clifford and Avenue D, or Joseph and Avenue D, and you'll see it just filled with kids and with families. And that's where they go. That's their neighborhood anchor. It's not a Y anymore. It's not a church. It's the library. And that's true in the Arnett neighborhood in the 19th Ward. It's true at the Sully branch over on Webster Avenue. That's where people go.
So that $11 million gap in state funding that's been proposed, if it doesn't get filled, again, keep sort of fleshing out for us what the changes is going to be, what's not going to be there versus what could be there with that funding.
Well, what the Monroe County Library System does with state funding is to support the library system services, and that includes the online catalog, all of the internet access, our telecommunications network, delivery. The library system is the reason why you can live in Irondequoit and get a book from Chi-Li in 2 days. We have 20 member libraries within Monroe County that share millions of items from their collections. So if you live in the small town of Rush or Scottsville, you have access to, as I said, millions of items for a very small amount of money. What we've had to do over the last few years, as we've had cuts in state aid, is to pass the system costs on to our member libraries. So the cost to belong to the Monroe County Library System has increased for the town of Greece, for the city of Rochester, for Fairport, for Irondequoit, for every member in the system. And that, in turn, has led to sort of a trickle-down effect of some programs not being continued or limitations being placed on what can be purchased.
All right, listeners, it's 844-295-TALK. That's toll-free. We'd love to hear from you on where you think the future of libraries is and what it should be, and if you want your tax dollars to support the systems in the same way that it has, or in maybe even a higher degree. It's 844-295-TALK, toll-free, 844-295-8255. Whoa, Twitter feed is filled with comments. I just asked people before the hour, when's the last time you used your public library? And it's filled here. So anyway, I will start reading some of those tweets. Very interesting cross-section of our community in a moment here. But I want to bring in Maria Fisher, who has a fascinating story. It's from the bullet points I've read, but don't let me tell it. Tell us why you're here.
Well, thanks, Evan. I consider myself a library fanatic, not just a patron. I grew up, my parents were teenage high school dropouts. We didn't own a book. And when I tell middle class families that, they don't really understand what that means. How did you not have a book? Because it was food or books, and food was going to win. The only book we had was a phone book. That was it, and they deliver that for free. So 2 to 3 days per week, we would go and get books for me. So I had literature everywhere. I loved it. We would spend 3 to 4 hours at the library. My parents, even though they dropped out of school, they were voracious readers. And so if it wasn't for the libraries, I would have not had access to those books. And there's something, I think libraries are just the most beautiful example of democracy that I can think of. A child can go to a Joseph Avenue Library, live on Avenue D, and have access to the same information that a child in Pittsburgh can have. Where else in this community can that happen? It certainly is not happening in the schools. Libraries are very special.
All right. So for you, a very personal reason.
Yes.
And a very personal connection there. You ever think, before I get to the phones, you ever think about what it would have been like for you, especially in your upbringing, if you didn't have that access?
Absolutely. You know, it was hard enough. It's hard enough to be a poor kid in school. Your parents aren't going to sit on the school board. They're not going to be on the PTA. There's all of those things. They didn't come to school conferences because they were intimidated by the system. There's so much knowledge that I would not have ever had access to. And I was also raised by my grandparents who were Ukrainian, never spoke any English. And so at home, we were a Ukrainian-speaking household. But they understood my love of libraries and brought me there. My family, my aunts, all my aunts and uncles are from Ukraine. They survived Stalin and then survived a Nazi slave labor camp. And then to come here and have access to all information was something amazing to them. So they never learned to read English. They never learned to write English. But they brought me to the library all the time because they wanted better for me. And had I not had that access, I don't know what would have happened.
And so just again to reiterate the point, in that household you grew up in, no books in the house.
Right. That's correct.
For friends that you made and people that you have talked to throughout your life, you know, that has to be a bit of a gripping statement for most people who are just used to having bookshelves, books in your kids' rooms, books on, you know, on your nightstand. No books.
Absolutely. It's very different from my husband, he comes from a teacher and a preacher. Both had college degrees. You know, and I asked him one day, and I was like, was I middle class? And he's like, you were poor, really poor. But I didn't know it because every 2 days my mom would be like, we're going on an adventure. We didn't own a car. We would walk from Portland and Norton to Central Library. And we're going on adventure. Put your snow pants on. And it was exciting. I didn't know I was poor. And the reason I didn't know was because I was surrounded by lots of other kids at Central. And I was surrounded by beauty and books and knowledge. And I had no idea I was poor. But had I not had that, that would have been really obvious to me. And the lack would have been painful.
I understand why Patty and Kathy and the group brought Maria to tell her story. It's a remarkable story.
Thank you.
Let me grab some phone calls here, and I'm going to start with Patricia in Irondequoit. Go ahead, Patricia.
Thanks, Evan. I just love the story that this woman just told about.
Isn't that amazing?
Her love for libraries. I think she and I were separated at birth because I have the same passion and love since my young childhood. And really, the reason I called is to just recognize the work that Patty Utaro and the the library trustees have done to give our community an outstanding library system. And libraries are invaluable, as the speaker had said earlier, about promotion of democracy and equality and access to information. And the libraries have learned to adapt as technology has changed and people's lives have changed to provide the services that people need. I frequent the Winton Library. That's my neighborhood library. And at opening time, the line is wrapped around the building of waiting for people to get in there who need to apply for jobs, need help with creating resumes. The libraries have done an amazing job of adapting to the needs of our community. So I cannot imagine life without the library.
Patricia, thanks for the phone call. Thanks very much, Colin, from Irondequoit. And she's listening here in our community on WXXI Radio. We, of course, are also simulcasting on WEOS 91.5 FM throughout the Finger Lakes on Finger Lakes Public Radio. And let me go down now to Penn Yan. And this is Paulina calling from Penn Yan. Hi, Paulina.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm so excited to get on your show. I've always listened to it, and I think it's important that you bring these topics to light, because our library is one of the treasures in our community. I have a 10-year-old son and a 6-year-old daughter, voracious readers, because we frequent the library every week. I am from Latin America, and we don't have that opportunity of free library like you guys do up here, and I've taken full advantage of it, and I think it's just so important. They're both good students. They're both reading, and they're just doing really well in school. And that is just a resource that we have in our community that has to be taken into consideration for what it does for us, for the communities that may not have other outlets, for kids. And one of the things that I also wanted to suggest is that there will be, you know, the places where we can take our kids to learn about coding, for example, which, our library offers, and our schools don't. So the thought that they would be cutting funding to our libraries, it's appalling to me. And I wanted to just, to be the voice for a small community like ours that our libraries are our safe haven. So.
And Paulina, let me ask you before you go, so where did you grow up?
I grew up in Ecuador.
In Ecuador. And so, again, the contrast to you is pretty stark, living now in the Finger Lakes versus where you grew up in Ecuador.
In Ecuador, we just don't have the access to the wonderful libraries that you guys have here. And it's just such an amazing resource. And to sometimes hear that, libraries don't have a place because technology has changed. I actually, more important than ever, to get books to our kids. To take them away from, being on the screen all the time.
Yeah, that's a good point.
My kid reads books. I mean, he eats them up. And it is possible. And, that is something that we can't forget. It's up to parents to, instill that love for books to them. And the libraries help us do that, for sure.
Thank you, Paulina. Thanks for listening down in Penn Yan and the Finger Lakes, and great to talk to you.
Thanks for taking my call. Thanks for the work you do.
And listening to Paulina's story, Maria, look at the echo there. Again, with roots in another country, that's somebody who doesn't take for granted. And I'm not sitting here as the host of this program as an advocate. I'm not here saying the state must do this in funding, but I am observing something interesting here. Your story is similar to Paulina, even though her roots are in Ecuador. You've got family roots in Ukraine, but both of those stories are similar in that if you don't have that, maybe you do take for granted the resource, yeah?
Absolutely, Evan. And in this community, we have a large refugee population.
Yep.
And if you went to the Maplewood Library after school, you would see hundreds of children there. They provide snacks for the kids there. What an opportunity. My family came as refugees, too. They were called displaced persons at that time. But we have this large refugee population that's going to keep coming. And what a wonderful opportunity for them. And how do we even have the discussion that we take away those resources for people who have gone through so much to be here and are so appreciative of our community?
Yeah, certainly it's not just people either in poverty like you grew up.
Right.
Or, with lesser means. It's not just them who use the library in our community. Like I said, I mean, my son and I are at the library all the time for various reasons. I love the kids' spaces and things like that. But it also makes you realize that for those taxpayers who think, I don't use it. Mm-hmm. You know, there is an argument for the benefit, I think, or at least a discussion to be had. But listen, if you disagree, we'd love to hear from you, too. You can call the program 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. Phones are loaded here. People want to talk libraries, so let's just keep moving down through the line there. Let me grab Ted in Rochester. Go ahead, Ted.
Hi, Evan. How are you doing today?
Good.
Thank you so much.
Sure.
I heard a little snippet this morning on 1370 that you were doing the show today, and I got really excited because I love libraries. Seeing the value of it really came about for me when I was directed to the local history section of the downtown library that I'd never known existed. And suddenly I was able to look at old newspapers, and I use it as a research tool, really. I'm in the process of writing a book right now, and it's been invaluable. And what I would love to see, two things. Number one, resources given to libraries so they can actually expand their ability to archive. It used to be newspapers, now it might be websites that have, you know, local content. And two, just an increase in the hours. It's really despairing when you try to go to the library in the morning, they're not open until 10 or 11. Well, you have to leave at 6 because they close early. And I think it's just it's an incredible resource and it needs to be expanded.
Yeah, Ted, thanks for the phone call. He's not the only one. On social media elsewhere, there have been questions about hours. How do we change that? So, Patty, yeah. Tara, you want to jump in there?
Sure. Hours are tied directly to staff, which is tied directly to funding. The Central Library of Rochester and Monroe County is open 53 hours a week right now, which is less than some of our smaller libraries out in the suburbs. We have limited access for 4 hours of those 53 to just the first floor of the Bausch & Lomb building, and all of that is tied to cuts that we've had to make to staffing, to security guards, to librarians, to clerks, in order to absorb cuts from all levels of our funding.
All right, so more funding, maybe more of an opportunity to expand hours.
Simple
equation.
Absolutely.
Ted, thanks for the phone call. Let's get to Bob in Rochester. Go ahead, Bob. Hi, Bob. Go ahead.
Hi. Yeah, I just want to mention one of the reasons why I think libraries and librarians in particular are particularly important, even in the age of Google and online research. I mean, there's lots of reasons, but one that always stands out for me is that when you do a search online and you get your results from Google or some other search engine or method, the determination of what's showed to you as being relevant or important is related to a lot of factors. It could be an algorithm that prioritizes popularity. It could be related to someone doing some good search engine optimization. It could have to do with all sorts of reasons. And then the researcher ends up seeing these sources as the ones that one should go to. The librarian is the one who's most purely has the interests only of the researcher in mind. They serve only the needs of what is going to be the best source or resource for that person. And so that what you end up seeing or getting or curated by the librarian, the method and the motivation is really directed just to the researcher's interest and is not sort of diluted by other, you know, economic or other possible things that will determine what it is one actually finds and gets in terms of what one needs for a project.
Yeah, Bob, thanks for the phone call. Some thoughts? Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's really great to hear that because really librarians are educators. And not only do we know the resources, but we teach people to evaluate the resources. So in school libraries, they teach what's called information literacy, which really talks about looking at what's on the web and seeing, is it authoritative? What's the source of it? What's the bias? That's a lifelong skill that you really need. Because when you're going out to buy a refrigerator and you go on the web, you need to know what you're looking at and who's sponsoring it. So that skill's taught in school, in colleges, and in public libraries.
I think that is a very important skill. I was just talking yesterday to Kate, our intern, about just ability to find information. And remember Kate? She's nodding at me. We talked about there's a book called A More Beautiful Question. And it's about the fact that there is more information available at our fingertips now than any point in human history. But some of us, and sometimes the next generation, again, this is not an attack on millennials, don't worry, millennials, but the question is, are we good at finding it? Are we good at asking the right questions? Are we good at discerning when the information presented to us is not authoritative? And that's a great skill to have. So I'm glad to hear that, Kathy. It reminds me of the Abraham Lincoln quote, which is that 90% of quotes on the internet are fake, as Abraham Lincoln famously said. So it is a great skill to have. Here's what I want to do. Every single phone line is jammed. We're just going to spend the rest of the hour letting our community talk to our great panel about libraries. But I'm practically begging for somebody to call in with some dissent here. You know, I know there must be naysayers who are I'm sort of kidding, but look, there is a great response. I've got too many tweets that I could possibly read. Here's Charlie. Just a few months ago, I was in our local library. I plan to get back to the Greece Library very soon. I hope and pray their futures are still bright. P on Twitter, she says, I went last week to the Henrietta Public Library to pick up a few books. Every time I've gone in the past month, it has been packed. Our news director, Randy, always enjoys spending time at both Rundell and the BNL Library. Great collections, he says there. Melissa says, I volunteer at the library weekly. My 9-year-old son started a Minecraft club there, so a lot going on there. So still working through your various tweets and comments, but let me get back to the phones. And Allison in Rochester is next up. Go ahead, Allison.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Mine's a little bit different. I wanted to ask the librarians, and I'm guessing I'm going to get a positive, that whether they have what I learned through a library situation in East Syracuse, a makerspace place, where we now have a makerspace in center in Rochester, I understand. And when I went to an Erie Canal Heritage Conference, what they told all the exciting things were happening to the buildings along the canal, and one was an East Syracuse library, which now had maker spaces where people could go in and use all kinds of materials and make whatever they wanted to make. And I wondered if we were doing anything like that in our Rochester system.
Allison, it's a great question. It's almost like you were a plant in the audience, even though I know you're not, because I know we wanted to get there. So where do you want to start? Why don't we have Matt start?
Sure.
Matt's here from Irondequoit Public Library, so why don't you start, Matt Kruger?
Thank you. In our new library, we have a dedicated maker space. And as I mentioned before, the Library Foundation allowed us to get a 3D printer that's been really popular. We have an embroidery machine. We have two sewing machines.
What can you print with a 3D printer?
Virtually anything. You make a file, or you can, if you have a 3D scanner, you can replicate another item and print it out. You can print with plastic or bronze.
Wow.
It's stainless steel mixed with plastic. You can even get wood. So, you know, there's a lot of hobbyist kind of fun things, but you can also do more practical things with that. We have soldering irons. We've been doing soldering classes. We have other robotics things. We were hosting a Lego robotics team in our makerspace. So lots of different things.
Okay. And Patty as well?
Yeah, I can add a little bit to that as well. This goes back to a comment that Maria made about find what you can find at the Lincoln Branch Library on Joseph Avenue. But this is at the Sully Library. Sully Library's had a 3D printer for a couple years. And the kids there absolutely love creating designs and printing them out. You can draw a superhero and have it turned into a 3D version of that. You know, where else can you do that, right? And at the Central Library, our arts division does making programs all the time. They're doing a really neat program called Craft It Forward, where they're teaching people how to make cat toys for pet shelters, and you know they're creating things to give away with sewing machines, with knitting, crocheting. Tomorrow or Saturday, for example, this Saturday there's a bookmaking program where you can go to the Central Library and learn how to make your own book. All of that is happening throughout the Monroe County Library System. One of the callers, I think, from Penn Yan mentioned coding. The Greece Library, at least one Saturday a month, has a coder dojo for young kids at their library. You can find information about that on their website. Other libraries in the system are also doing different types of making programs for the smallest kids up to adults.
All right. So, Allison, hope that answers your question. There's certainly some makerspace going on there. Let me get Keith in Victor. Go ahead, Keith. Hi, Keith. Are you there, Keith? We don't have Keith. Well, Keith was calling with a question. According to producer Megan Mack, Keith just wanted to know. Said he loves the new Irondequoit Library. Why do they put metal leaves at the top of the atrium? All right, Matt, it's an aesthetic question for you. because you think it's beautiful.
yeah, I guess that's kind of a subjective view. But the design company that we hired came up with a, you know, we tried to do a theme, kind of classic, but also modern, timeless. You know, not everybody's going to like it, but a lot of people do. That's a question I don't, that wasn't my decision.
I only let Keith through with that just because I wanted some dissent here. I couldn't have a full hour of pure love for libraries.
Sorry,
right?
Keith.
Man, I think the leaf motif is carried throughout your building, right?
Right.
I mean, your donor wall is mm-hmm. a tree with leaves,
yes.
correct?
Yep.
And then those leaves carry throughout.
Maybe Keith has terrible artistic sensibilities. So yeah, he's a regular listener. He's fine. You want to respond now, Keith? Go ahead.
I didn't hear. It's a long story, but I had another phone call come in. I got a comment and a question.
Yeah.
And this is going to be the first negative comment.
No, we just talked about your leaf question. You missed it.
Oh. What was the answer? Because those are appalling.
The answer is, it's a matter of opinion.
Something.
They don't think it's appalling, but go ahead.
Well, but for the money you spent on something that's, what, 40, 50 feet up in the air that's just going to collect dust and people are going to say, oh, my God, our tax dollars can't even wipe the leaves off?
We actually have a special, like, wand that we use to dust it. I've seen it in action. I know, because that is a big concern.
I saw that on Harry Potter.
Yes, they do the Quidditch thing to clean the appalling metal leaves.
But I do have to say, on a positive, it's a beautiful facility. I like the wide open space. I would say it's probably one of the nicer ones around. Not that I go to libraries.
Thank you.
But do you guys track the people in and out? To see how many, are you up over the year? Do you get more people? I mean, do you do more analysis of the people that come in?
It's a great question, Keith. Thanks for the phone call. And Matt, can I read the numbers again?
Of course, yeah.
Those are the latest I was able to find. Mm-hmm. So, Keith, to answer your question, with the new library in Irondequoit, 133,107 visitors from September through the end of the year, and that is 34% higher than the same 4 months to finish last year. About 200,000 items loaned out, that's a 26% increase over last year. 351 reservations were taken from meetings and events held by various clubs, and so, you know, basically, Keith, everything looks like it is up, right, Matt? Fair enough?
Definitely.
Okay, so I hope that answers your question there, Keith. All right, so still on the line. Dana, Marion, Joe, Carrie, we're all coming back to you after this short break and continue the discussion on the future of libraries right here on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, To Kill a Mockingbird goes to the Jeeva stage with their own production of the classic, but there are community events tied to it that go beyond Jeeva as well. So we'll talk To Kill a Mockingbird, and then we're talking about losses in popular music. David Bowie, Glenn Frey, Maurice White, Paul Kantner, and there's a free weekend concert. So we'll reminisce and look ahead. That's all next hour.
Support for your public radio station comes from our members and from Renova Solar, serving upstate New York with the design and installation of solar power systems for home and business. More information at renovasolar.com.
Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, and the impetus for this discussion on libraries was the state-proposed cut in funding. By state law, they're supposed to provide about $102.6 million, that's the formula, for the next full budget year for the library system. And the proposal in the Cuomo budget is $11 million less than that. So before I get back to your phone calls, Jake writes to the program and says, how can they get away with that? Why are they allowed to do that? And so once again, Kathy Miller is the executive director of the Rochester Regional Library Council. And the answer is they can do that, even though they're not supposed to, yes?
Yes, of course. It's just the law says one thing, but if the money isn't there, or if they decide the money isn't there, or they want to put it elsewhere, that's where it goes. And really, there's no control over it.
And has it? This is not the first year this has happened, correct?
This has happened since 2008, and it's been gradually getting better. But we really need people to talk to their local legislators and their state and state senators and assemblymen. They can make a change on this. They can actually say, we need more money. They did it last year, and funding was increased beyond what the governor had asked for. So if we do it again this year, we will get more funding.
All right, Dana in Fairport is next up. Go ahead, Dana.
Hi. I have three kids, and we used to go to the library a lot, and we do still go to the library. But in Fairport, they recently, we did the entire library, and there's a lot of iPads in the children's area and online games, and the iPads are on brightly colored rubber, and the kids just want to do that now. They're not as interested in the book, so that's just been a challenge for us, and I don't know if anybody had any comments or ideas of why, what the thought process was with putting all of those.
Yeah, Dana, it's a good question, Dana. Thanks for the phone call. And Patty, you want to start? Go ahead.
Sure, I can answer that to a certain extent. The children's librarians at the Fairport Library, Ann Hicks and Amy Jocelyn, spent a lot of time thinking about what kind of technology they wanted to have in the children's room. Ann especially is a nationally recognized consultant on technology for very young children. She speaks at conferences all over. She's done a lot of research on it. And their intent was to provide access to the technology, but to also offer enough other types of activities and distractions and materials within the children's center to get kids interested in books as well. If you have very young children and you've attended any of their infant story times, you'll see how they work with kids on sensory and motor skill applications. I happen to see pictures from a story time that they did around sensory skills, and you walk into their room and there's a floor covered with bubble wrap, and the kids can walk on it and pop it and understand what makes that noise, and then that's tied back to whatever books they're working with in story time. And I would guess, as a parent myself, having kids who love screens, it's something that you have to do yourself as well, as to work with them on the screens, but also direct them towards the books. And the staff in the children's department can always help you with that. They have plenty of tactile materials that you can use to distract your kids away from the screens.
Okay. Dana, thanks for the phone call. And that phone call crystallizes sort of the push and pull parents have with technology being an asset at times, but also being a distraction at times. And for all of us who are parents, you want your kids to read. You want them to love books, and that can be a challenge. So great question, Dana. Next up, Carrie and Victor. Go ahead, Carrie.
Hi. This whole program has started me reflecting on my own library journey, and I was remembering that as a child, I was pretty shy and self-conscious, even though I might not look that way. And whenever I would go, they'd give you those little orientations to the library because we were supposed to know how to use it. And I never got it down. I was just, too distracted or something. So anyway, I never really understood how to use it. I was intimidated, but the librarians were always so patient. There was no judgment going on. And, I did use the library because I loved to research. Even in college, I didn't know how to use the library, but I did use it, because they were so patient with me. And then when I married my husband, I sadly stayed away from it for, my own entertainment or whatever. And my husband is such a fan, huge fan, that we started going on dates to the library, after we were married even. And I slowly have learned how to use it. I go to the Fairport Library. I loved it before it was redone, and now I love it. It's all totally rejuvenated. It's beautiful. We always choose a book to read together, And then lately, with my kids both launched, I'm picking up books just for the enjoyment of reading, and the librarian is helping me find books because I don't know, you know, I don't know the titles even. So they, I'm slowly learning what my favorite genres are, what my favorite styles are, and it's just, I could never, we have a budget, and I could not afford books like this, and it's just a beautiful world, and not to mention also, I mean, to mention, I guess, you know, I've found that I really love editing. Oh my God, I find every single mistake, and it's like, you know, in the books, you know, and so I've sort of, you know, started branching out. You know, I was a teacher, I was a therapist, I, you know, had all these little lives that I've lived, and now I'm retired, and I find that I'm enjoying editing and helping kids edit their papers and, you know, help them with the learning, the editing process, and so it's, I don't know, it's just, we use the musics, we, you know, the music, my husband just pores over it, and we've, I would not be a fan of classical music if it wasn't for my husband bringing home these, you know, unusual, I don't know the names of them, but he does. Movies, I would not, that's not in my budget at all, but we get to get them from, okay, it's later than they came out, who cares, you know? and, you know, it's a date at home, you know, and they have friends over sometimes. And the other thing, two things I wanted to say, am I going on too long?
Carrie, everyone in this room is loving what you're saying, so they're not going to interrupt you.
I'm go ahead. Happy you don't have to whisper anymore, those poor kids. Not because I was quiet, but I'm just telling you, those kids, are you kidding? People had to put so much energy into helping those kids be quiet, and they were sometimes rude to the, not the librarians so much as their parents, you know, they couldn't, they're so self-conscious because their kids were making noise, you know. Now that's like just free. Oh my God, how wonderful. And then the other thing, the last thing I was going to say was, because I do a lot of research, sometimes, and this is just not a negative really, but just I'm concerned, I know what the, it's really good, especially in the mental health field, to have current information, like say the DSM-5 is even almost out of date. What is it, the DSM-6 now? I don't know. But the, not, but the point is like, say, schizophrenia, for instance. Well, the new research is very new. You know, parasites, some parasites in cats can be a trigger, which is so new. It's like 2015, really well-researched stuff. And that, there's a book I just saw, actually, on that, that is brand new. But they still have some of the old stuff that if a kid did research, now I hope the teachers would say, you know, 2010 or later,
sure,
you know,
sure,
don't get something from 1999. But that stuff is so old that it would be not relevant.
Well, Carrie, let me just jump in and say thank you, Carrie, for the phone call. And actually, that last point is an interesting one because I just want to ask the people involved in the library systems locally, how do you make sure that, especially scientific information, everything is as current as possible? Is that a funding issue or is that just sort of a maintenance? Is that up to the staffs?
It's up to the staff. At the Central Library, we have subject divisions, which most of the member libraries don't have to that extent in their buildings. And we have staff who are subject specialists, and they do regular collection maintenance. Fortunately, all of our collections are automated, so we have some really good tools to help us weed out the things that haven't been used in a long time. We've just actually been awarded a consumer health grant to replace a significant amount of the consumer health information at the Central Library and to set up a consumer health center there on the third floor. So, you know, that kind of collection maintenance is happening all the time.
Okay, let me grab one more phone call, and this is Marion in Rochester, has been waiting to jump in. Marion, we've been talking about the impact of libraries on families, kids especially, and I'm told that you're not a young child, so you want to weigh in on the impact on you.
Almost 93, and I elected to stay in my own home. I live alone, and if it weren't for the library, oh my gosh, it is everything to me. They have supplied me, I'm with the Browncroft Library, and they have supplied me with a machine that will play up to 8 or 9 books, and I am constantly reading, listening. I can't read. And so it has made a great life for me. I'm entertained and can't wait. It's morning, noon, and night. So I just wanted to tell you how appreciative I am with the library and the system. I will even call them and say, I'm walking down, I'm two blocks away, and they will cross the street and get me over. I have my walker. And so it's a love affair I have. I thank you all so very much. Thank you.
Marion, thank you. And thank you for calling the program and sharing that beautiful story. To that end, Peter writes to us on Twitter and says, it should be noted that libraries offer services for those unable to go to libraries, sometimes the elderly, sometimes people who have various disabilities. Yes, Patty?
Yes, that's correct. The outreach department for the Central Library currently delivers to, I want to say, about 63 individuals throughout Monroe County who are shut-ins, who are unable to leave their homes. And I know a number of our member libraries also do local deliveries as well.
All right. So a lot of really supportive comments from various platforms on Twitter, email, phone calls this hour. And so let's start the wrap of the hour with the question now. You know, 30 years ago, it would have been impossible to know exactly what was coming. You know, there's still that Katie Couric and Brian Gumbel clip, you know, from the Today Show in 1994 with her saying, what is an internet? Mm-hmm. You know, so it's impossible to know exactly where we're going. But a generation from now, Patty, what's a library likely to look like? As long as, you know, maybe you're not going to get every dollar of funding you want every year, but as long as the public maintains it, what might libraries look like in a generation?
I think we're going to continue to see a hybrid of online, digital, and physical materials. I think we'll continue to see physical library buildings, not so much as warehouses for books or materials, but as community gathering spaces. You know, I think Matt mentioned earlier about the number of times the meeting rooms and the meeting spaces at Around Equate have been used just in the first 4 months they were opened. You know, that happens all over the county, and I don't see that changing at all. You know, I'm seeing at the very young level, there's a lot right now, a lot of emphasis on early learning and early childhood literacy using both digital and physical materials. So our kids are, you know, our kids who are going to be that next generation are growing up with books, still with the physical books. So I think it'll be a while before we see just full digital for libraries and for consumption. And I think as long as publishers keep printing books, libraries will keep buying them.
Kathy Miller, what do you think it's going to look like in a generation?
I concur with Patty. And we really have to remember that libraries are both a place and a concept. It really is the idea of the library, the idea of a place where knowledge is valued, where your information is trusted, where you can go in and everybody is equal. So whether that's a place and has a full of books or full of computers, it's going to be a place where people gather.
Matt, what do you think?
I don't know if I can add anything to that. Those were both pretty great. But I would say, you know, the libraries that are successful are the ones that best adapt to the needs of their specific communities. Yeah. And I think you'll see as communities evolve, the libraries will evolve more towards whatever that specific community really needs.
I think that's well said. And I know that's what they're trying to do in your new digs as well.
Definitely. Yep.
All right, Maria, I know you're just a patron. You know, you're
not just a patron.
You're just a patron. But what would you hope in a generation?
My hope really is to see more funding for the libraries. Honestly, as you've heard from all your callers, people love libraries. They're just below puppies and kittens at things that people really, really love. So why do we even have this discussion? Why do we have to face every year these cuts, and what are we going to do? Libraries are the most budget-efficient thing we have in this community. They're very inexpensive to run. The staff do a ton of work. They're highly educated. So what I really want to see is for the community to say, no more budget cuts for libraries. We love libraries. Unacceptable. We don't even have this discussion. And stop. And every library should have the resources it needs to serve the community. That's what I want to see.
And I'll make a controversial prediction to end the hour myself, not working in the library community. You know what I think we're going to see in a generation in libraries? Books, still. You know, for all the talk that books were going to be gone,
yep.
I think I understand that information is transferring digitally, and that's great, but I still think that tactile sensation, I think it is not just enjoyable for people who are older. I think it is a cultural value that we have as a species, and I don't think it's going away entirely, and I'm glad to say it. Though, in 25 years, when I'm hosting this program, we'll host a panel, and I will laugh at this prediction if I'm wrong, but I hope it's right. Thanks to everyone for coming in here. Kathy Miller, Patty Utaro, please keep us updated on how things go with the funding year, because clearly your community cares. You heard that today. Matt Kruger, good luck in continued work at the Irondequoit Public Library. Great to see you here.
Thank you.
And Maria Fisher, your story is so remarkable, inspiring in so many ways, and thanks for sharing it with us.
Thanks so much.
All right. Thanks for everyone who participated on the program today. Let's take a short break, and more Connections next.